I'm drawing it up. I'm building it. I am hosting it. I am and doing that every step of the way. So it doesn't leave a lot of time for brand building and marketing. And it seems like I might put in a lot of effort into that, but it's all basically incoming. So, you know, I've done like national commercials and countless TV shows of my different places being on. And, you know, but it's all what I think is like me being so solely focused on being true to like what I love, what I want to do, what I'm passionate about. And then that other just comes, you know, so I'm not trying to fight for those eyeballs ever. And I get like really cool opportunities. I've been in like video games, and we just had a partnership with Lay's at the Potato Hotel. You know, it's just like, there's so many crazy fun things that happen, and lots of them I don't even get to because I'm in on a mountaintop somewhere and I don't have service. And if you email me during those months, I missed it, you know?
Welcome to Behind the Stays, a podcast that shares the stories behind your favorite Airbnbs, boutique hotels, and hospitality brands, and the hosts, operators, and entrepreneurs who have brought them to life. Every Tuesday and Friday, you'll meet the military veterans, the retired flight attendants, tech entrepreneurs, the school teachers, the single moms, and the real estate investors who are all, in their own unique ways, shaping the future of travel and hospitality. Discover how these visionaries from all over the world have built chic cabins in the mountains, designed bohemian bungalows on the beach, erected eclectic off-grid and nature-immersed escapes, and so much more. Behind the Stays is brought to you by Spontaneous, the internet's best destination for last-minute Airbnb deals. You can subscribe for free at spontaneous.com. And I'm your host, Zach Buzicruz, co-founder and CEO of Spontaneous. All right, friends, enjoy the show. So a buddy and I were chatting about the future of hospitality the other day, and one of the resounding themes that we just like kept coming back to was the idea that highly curated and original experiences are the new luxury when it comes to travel, right? Like everyone wants something bespoke, everyone wants something unique. Now, not everyone can design like an Instagram-worthy Airbnb or build like a truly unique stay on like the perfect parcel of land, but every hospitality entrepreneur can deliver a unique, one-of-a-kind experience for guests. And the truth of the matter is that you can't provide these sorts of experiences at scale without digital guidebooks, which is why I'm super excited to tell you a little bit about my new friends at Hostfully. Hostfully digital guidebooks are the easiest way to help your guests get to know your property and discover just how special the community that surrounds it is. Hostfully guidebooks give you a dynamic place to store every bit of information you might want your guests to have, from the Wi-Fi password to how to work the hot tub to where to take the best selfies at golden hour. That's one of my favorites, actually, so be sure you do that if you don't already. Hostfully empowers you with easy-to-use tools that help you feature a totally curated list of your favorite eateries, pubs, hiking trails, and more. Or Hostfully can automatically create a list of experiences through their guidebook wizard if you've got dozens of properties and just can't afford to curate a custom set of recommendations for each one. But here's where things get even more exciting. You guys listening? You sure? Listening. All right, cool, listen up. You can create a marketplace within Hostfully guidebooks that enables you to sell things like early check-in, late checkout, airport transfers, a custom romance package, kayak rentals, etc. Your guests can purchase these add-ons directly through your guidebook before or during their stay, which enables you to make a little extra cash money. All right. I know what you're thinking, right? You're like, Zach, this all must cost an arm and a leg, right? But that's where you'd be wrong, friends. If you're just starting out on your hospitality entrepreneurial journey and have just one property, your first guidebook is totally free. If you have multiple properties, it's also super affordable. For example, it costs just $25 a month for up to 5 properties. But if you use the discount code BTS at checkout, you can get 2 free months for any Hostfully guidebook subscription. Again, that's BTS as in Behind the Stays. So if one of your goals this year is to try to up your guest experience game, there's really no reason to not give Hostfully a try. Head on over to hostfully.com/BTS, that's BTS as in Behind the Stays, to learn more about Hostfully guidebooks. Again, that's hostfully.com/BTS, and be sure to use the discount code BTS at checkout. And if you talk to the team there, tell them that Zach from Behind the Stays sent you their way.
In just a moment, you'll meet Christy Wolf, the entrepreneur and builder behind some of the world's most famous Airbnbs, including the Big Idaho Potato Hotel, the Big Island Tree House, the Hobbit Inn, and so many others. Growing up, Christy always wanted to do her own thing. She actually convinced her parents to let her drop out of high school because she felt like she could learn more about business outside of the classroom rather than indoors. Christy is a true creative. She gets an idea in her head and just has to execute it, even if, and arguably especially if, it just doesn't make sense to many other people. In this conversation, Christy and I discuss why she built her first unique Airbnb long before it was cool and before anyone else was really doing it, how she forged an early partnership with Airbnb as the company started dreaming up what would eventually become categories on their platform, how she creatively financed each of her builds, why she thinks what she builds resonates with folks, what she's working on next, and so much more. All right, friends, without further ado, get ready to meet Christy. Alrighty, Christy, we are live. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I am just ecstatic for this conversation because I'm trying to remember how I first heard about you and your incredible work in the unique short-term rental space. And I actually think, if I remember correctly, I think I saw the article that you were featured in that Airbnb had put out years ago on like Unique Stays. And this was like right when Unique Stays were really becoming a thing. And of course, you know, you had this big, huge potato and it was like, you can stay in a potato. And I remember just thinking, who is this? Like who designed this? And actually, I believe that was my very first introduction to Christy Wolf. So it's an honor to be chatting with you today.
The potato being my legacy is something I could have never predicted, but I'm really happy about it. People think that because it went so crazy that was like the launch of my Airbnb career, but that's actually my fourth unique. And I had got started like 11 years ago.
Wow.
And so when people like introduce me now as the potato girl, I'm like, I'll take it. I thought the potato would be like, this is just something I'm doing for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to be able to charge as much. Okay. It's not in a beautiful location like all the other ones are. And then, you know, it just went crazy.
Well, because I mean, you know, when we talk about Unique Stays, right? Like people think like, oh, tree houses and like glass boxes and, you know, just really one of a kind A-frames. No one default thinks potato, but I mean, what is more unique than being able to stay in a potato hotel, right? Like it's just such a novel concept. So yeah, well done. I want to get into the story there, but before we do so, one of my favorite questions to ask folks, Christy, when they come on the pod is, if I were to have met you as a 10-year-old, so 10-year-old Christy, and I were to walk up to you and say, "Hey, Christy, like, what do you want to be when you grow up?" What would you have said?
That is a good question. I don't know that I was thinking about work at 10 years old, but I would say, you know, hindsight, you could definitely see the tracks being laid down. My parents were very loose by like letting me design my rooms however I want. So at 10, my bedroom was teal, pink, and purple splatters. So my mom let me and my best friend take these paintbrushes and splat these colors, like Taco Bell colors, all over the room, ceiling, walls, everything. And then I had also, in our class, we had made dream catchers. So I did that on the color scheme. And so I had this big dream catcher on there, or God's Eye, I guess is what they're called.
Yeah.
But so I definitely liked, you know, getting my hands dirty. I liked remodeling. I liked design back then. But the thing I will say is that I knew I would be an entrepreneur. I knew I'd be a business owner. Back then, you know, I would read Entrepreneur Magazine and I could only understand like a little bit of tiny fraction on it. But that stayed with me so much that even like I dropped out of high school.
Wow.
With good grades. My dad's a high school teacher because I was like, well, this is my 16-year-old thinking, you go to high school so that you can go to college. And I'm not going to college because I'm going to own a business, even though I didn't know what that business would be. And I did work in lots of jobs before going out on my own for like the decades that I have. But I knew I wasn't going to be working for anyone else.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, what a cool sort of like idea to have, even at such a young age. I don't even know that you would have been able to articulate or even really understand, like, what 10-year-old really understands what it means to be an entrepreneur, right? But the idea of, hey, I don't really want to work for anybody else. I'm creative. I want to be able to express myself creatively in whatever way I want, right? Those feelings were very true to you from a very young age. And so it's cool. Hindsight's amazing. I love hindsight because, like, you see what you've been able to do today and the fact that you can recognize that, you know, the Jason Pollocking that you were doing in your bedroom all those years ago, right, is now coming to fruition in a really cool hospitality business. So that's awesome.
Well, yes, what I always think about is, like, you know, when you're telling the story, looking back on your life, you can do that. But I'm like, maybe I would have the same story if I said my parents, you know, were super strict and I had to have a white room and we had to have a bed and a bag and everything. And so when I, you know, moved out, then I went crazy. It could be the same story. I think people are just like born with their personality. You know, I don't think that my parents would have allowed any of their kids to drop out. But for me, it wasn't even, I don't know if they were just like, this isn't a, we're not going to win this fight, so let her, or if it was like, she'll be fine. Yeah. It's okay. You know, it's so hard to say.
Well, I mean, one of the things I actually know a couple of my close friends, one dropped out of high school and one dropped out of college after the first year. And both of them are incredibly successful and doing really cool things as far as, you know, I'm concerned. And I was thinking about this recently. If you are somebody that even has that thought, and assuming the thought isn't like, you're performing horribly, like you're super depressed. And like, there are obviously very sad stories of kids who have had really traumatic upbringings that want to leave. Like they want to get out, like they want to escape their reality. But like, there are also plenty of examples of kids like yourself who were doing great at school. Like you had good grades, but like you saw down the line and you realized this isn't for me. And these two friends of mine, the same thing. It's like, they were doing incredibly well. They could have, the one that dropped out of high school probably could have gone to a top college if he had wanted to, but realized, I've got bigger plans. I've got bigger dreams. And so in some ways, the kids that even have the idea of leaving, right, probably will be just fine if they do in fact leave.
Yeah, I think the overwhelming feeling I had at that, you know, 15, 16 year old was like, I just couldn't wait to get started with life. Like, I'm so excited about life. And so that was like the overwhelming thing. Like, when can I get done with this so I can like go do the things and, you know, do my own thing and not what other people require of me, you know?
Yeah. Oh gosh. Amazing. So, okay. At what point in time do you even become like aware of Airbnb and like this idea of being able to, you know, not just rent a bedroom in your home, but like build a crazy unique stay that people, like literally hundreds if not thousands of people, wind up staying at? Like, can you tell us about that story? Like, how were you first introduced to this world of hospitality?
Yeah, I got into the business before I had even used Airbnb platform. I was like, oh, this is cool. I've always been tracking like interesting ideas, and I had like a construction background. So I've always been remodeling places. I had built a tiny house. This is way back in the day. So it wasn't like cool, like the ones that there are now. There was no rooftop pool or anything like that. It was like a shed. And I had eliminated all my bills. I was working at a factory and a plastics factory. And I had built this tiny house as like an experiment in minimalism. I was just going to do it for a year. But when I moved into it, I loved it. Like, I loved the forced simplicity. It just felt like a weight off my shoulders. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to make this permanent. And so then I went down the route of buying land. I don't come from money. I didn't have any money. I was probably making like 12, 13 bucks an hour at this point. And I found a little piece of land where the potato sits now for $5,000. I did not have $5,000. I think the guy let me put down like 500 or something. And then I paid him monthly for 6 months or something. So when I had moved that off grid, so no utilities at this time, I was buying cars. I had a rule that they had to be under $500 and then I would run them into the ground, like zero maintenance. And then I'd recycle them and I'd get like $300 back. So, I have like a cell phone and car insurance. I'm not making great money, but I don't have expenses. And so I started thinking, that I would like to build a treehouse. And at a different factory that I had worked at, there was an electrician there who had told me, and this was years prior, that Hawaii had cheap land. Mm. And that seems like mind-blowing. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And that he knows a guy that spends his winters in Hawaii and his summers in Idaho. And so I went on Craigslist and I looked up land in Hawaii and I found a lot for $8,000. I called the guy up. We made a deal. Again, I did not have $8,000. I paid him $200 a month for 3 years, zero interest. And that kind of started it. But I hadn't stayed in an Airbnb. At that point, I was old enough to have gone on vacations with my girlfriends and stuff. And you would literally find a house to stay from like the Thrifty Nickel, like a newspaper. And then it was this whole thing. You had to go to some other office and sign like a 10-page lease. And then you had to like go search for your house. And then they were not equipped like Airbnbs are now. And so that was kind of the process, which is crazy. So when Airbnb came online, I was like, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And I decided that if I could make this work, I wanted to build a treehouse. That's what I wanted to do. But if I could rent it out 8 days a month, that would replace my factory job.
Wow.
And then if it didn't rent out, then my friends and family have a place in Hawaii and it would be like really cool to go do. And so luckily for me, it did rent out. It was pretty much booked solid. I paid back my investment, everything that I had put into it in the first 3 months. And been going for, I think this is on its like 12th year or something, 11 or 12. So that allowed me to buy the next piece of land and build the next thing.
Wow. Oh my gosh. This is all just so amazing. I mean, like you are a true, true like hustler, right? In the best sense of the word, in that you're literally like buying 500 cars that are less than $500, running them into the ground, finding a way to recycle them to get 300 back, somehow negotiating these like random deals with folks that you meet with very inexpensive land. First of all, I don't know where I'm actually from Hawaii. So I was born and raised in Kailua on Oahu, right? And
yeah.
Nobody says cheap and land in Hawaii in the same sentence. That doesn't exist. So I don't know how you swung this, but like absolutely amazing. At what point, like was the treehouse that you built in Hawaii and then listed on Airbnb, was that like what year was this? Was that like one of the first more unique stays on the platform, or talk to us a little bit about like just like the timeline here?
Yeah, there were two tree houses that I knew of on the Big Island of Hawaii. Okay. When I went to it. And I don't think either of them were on Airbnb. But when I had like bought the land and stuff and was starting to research, there was like two people, and one was like maybe Treehouse Masters or something had built it.
Yeah.
And the other one was like this hermit guy had built it for the last 15 years and it's all like really folksy and stuff. So I thought that mine was completely different. And then, yeah, Airbnb was just like such a new thing. Like, so nobody I knew had used it, had gone on it. And even when I started, I was like, oh, well, I'll do VRBO too. And then at that time, when I went to like register my house, VRBO made you pay like $800 a year. And I'm like, I have no idea if this is going to work, you know, I don't have $800 to spend on that. And so like just the ease of use of the platform and stuff,
yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm only going to do this one. And then I've only been on Airbnb since then. So it was a completely different world. And yes, Hawaii is not cheap. There's only a very specific area on the Big Island on the rainy side where you can find cheap land in volcano zone. So I should have specified that. It's beautiful. It's in a rainforest. It's very, very cool. But
yeah. Well, I mean, and now, right, people want like the kind of place where you can't get anywhere else, like unique and remote and sort of off grid, right, is luxury today, right? It's people don't want to be in downtown Waikiki, right? They want to have the true authentic experience that you can get in Hawaii, which is amazing. And so you build this treehouse, it within the first 2-3 months you're able to pay back everything that you've invested in. So what happens after that? Like, do you decide, hey, like, did you have a conscious conversation with yourself where you're like, I'm going to go and I'm just going to freaking build cool, unique structures and I'm going to list them on Airbnb and like, this is what I'm going to do with my life. Like, did that conversation happen, or what happened after the treehouse was a success?
So I'm alone probably like 95% of the time. So there's lots of conversations happening to myself. So my mom had come out for like the first month to help me build. And then when I had like a roof over my head, she was like, okay, good luck. I'm out of here. And then I was left to finish it up. But I was like, okay, if this works, then I really want to build a hobbit hole, because I thought that that building was really cool. I didn't know any of the like lore and hadn't read the books and stuff, but I was obsessed with the house. And so I was like, that's the one I want to do. And again, back then, and that contractor buddy who the electrician had hooked me up with that lived, he kind of became a little bit of a mentor. I rented a house from him when I went over there. And he was just like, put it on the ground. It'll be so much easier. What are you doing this for? And so then when it became successful, everybody's like, put up 10 of them, you know, like do treehouses. And that would have been like a really easy thing to fall into. But I had like zero desire. And that's kind of why my portfolio is so crazy. And people don't realize that the same person is the builder behind all these different, very different places. Because for me, it was like, oh, I want to do something completely different. I want to either do like a different type of construction, a different environment. Like I really like that challenge. And then when COVID happened, Hawaii completely shut down for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And so what I thought was like a poor business plan, and I was just like, whatever, I'm just doing what I like. By having these places scattered all over during COVID, it ended up being a lifesaver, because if I had invested everything there, and then Hawaii's become super restrictive and stuff since then, like it would have killed me, you know? Yeah. And so it's really worked out, but I can't say there was like a master plan. I was just like, oh, cool, I have enough. I think I can buy land at this other place. And then I've also owner financed everything. So I never had like a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
And so like the negotiating things or whatever, it's not from even knowing what owner finance was. It was just, hey, I don't have that much money, but can I give you this much for this long? And then everybody has said yes. Nobody was advertising an owner finance property. I just found these cool spots, asked them if they would be willing to, and it worked out.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. Last minute cancellations suck. And that's why we built Ping. Ping makes it easy for guests to be notified when their favorite Airbnbs become available. Ping is a simple widget that lives on your website or your direct booking site and allows your fans and followers to sign up and be notified if their preferred dates become available. Here's how it works. Jimmy sees that you're booked the whole month of October, but he wants to be notified if any 3-night window in the month becomes available. Jen is a returning guest, and she wants to be notified if any week in June, July, or August becomes available. In a matter of seconds, Jimmy and Jen fill out the simple form, and they will be pinged if the requested dates become available. And as a host, you will immediately get pinged via email with Jimmy and Jen's contact information and requested dates, which enables you to build up your own database of guest email addresses. Ping is what the best Airbnb hosts use to maximize bookings. You can get access to our beta pricing with plans that start at just $39 a year at bnbping.com. Again, that's bnbping.com. What's so cool about this too is, you know, as each time you've gone to somebody and pitched sort of a new deal structure, you have like a growing, like, you know, portfolio to showcase as like, hey, like, look, this is what I do. This is who I am. This is what I do. These are the kinds of things I've done. Like, I'm good for it, right? It's going to work, right? Trust me. Like, let's work this out. And to your earlier point about, you know, your stays sort of being all over the place, I think I've sent several DMs, actually, quite frankly, to your various properties on Instagram, having no idea that you were the person behind it all, until eventually I realized, oh, Christy Wolf, why do I keep seeing her name? I went to your Instagram, and then I saw like, oh my gosh, she's, you know, she in your bio, you've got links to all of the like individual homes. And I was like, she's behind all these like Instagram famous properties? Like, who knew? And so I do have a question there, because a lot of the people that come on the podcast are doing some incredible things. They're wonderful hospitality entrepreneurs. They're trying to build really cool brands. building luxury, you know, crazy cool treehouse resorts, building, you know, one of a kind A-frames, as I mentioned earlier. And a lot of them are taking the brand component very seriously, right? Like they want to build and own the entire customer experience. Many of them are building off Airbnb and are only using Airbnb to get going. And they have a very clear objective of totally getting off of the platform and having everyone book direct. So as you've thought about this, and you do have so many different kinds of stays, like you don't have, or if you do, it's not obvious, like a parent brand that wraps all of these together. Talk to us about that decision, because I know that that's a big question that a lot of people have is, do you build one umbrella brand, right, around your work, and or do you really just build a unique brand for each place? So how have you thought about that?
Yeah, you're totally right. And I'm not saying this is the right thing to go way to go about it. So for me, there is no brand. I don't have desire of being a brand. It takes a lot, you know, as those people will tell you, that takes a lot. And I think maybe the difference is I'm the one doing the physical building. So I'm drawing it up. I'm building it. I am hosting it. I am doing that every step of the way. So it doesn't leave a lot of time for brand building and marketing. And it seems like I might put in a lot of effort into that, but it's all basically incoming. So, you know, I've done like national commercials and countless TV shows of my different places being on and, you know, but it's all what I think is like me being so solely focused on being true to like what I love, what I want to do, what I'm passionate about. And then that other just comes, you know, mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to fight for those eyeballs ever. And I get like really cool opportunities. I've been in like video games, and we just had a partnership with Lay's at the Potato Hotel. You know, it's just like, there's so many crazy fun things that happen, and lots of them I don't even get to because I'm in on a mountaintop somewhere and I don't have service. And if you email me during those months, I missed it, you know? So I try not to think about so much like, I guess the strategy of, you know, if I did have this brand, when somebody checks out, we do tell them, hey, PS, I have these other ones too. And then people usually reply like, are you kidding me? I had this one on my wish list too. And then I have maybe a dozen people who have or are trying to go to all of them. And I've had like these really fun enamel pins made representing each property. And I will just send those to the guest and say like, thank you for the support. But yeah, most people don't know. They're individual little brands. And I don't put too much stock in it. Again, I think it's like really easy. I get a lot of like consulting offers, or, you know, I could have a course, or I could do sponsorships for Ruggable, but I'm like, if I have to like create this whole ad for this brand that I actually like, or I'm using, what is that taking away from, you know? And I already have like so many things that I want to do that I try not to get distracted, but it's not something I'm good at. It's I'm not like trying to say it's not the way to go, but for people who maybe like don't like showing up online, or that's just not their thing, and they don't like video editing and stuff, it's definitely a skill. I love when photographers and videographers come stay at my place because they actually capture it in a way that I cannot. So if you don't have those skills to think like, well, I'm not going to be able to do this, you can. And I think that is just a reflection of like how much passion and love I have for the places, and they end up finding their audience.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so well said. And, you know, one of the things that a friend of mine who is well known in the industry will say a lot is like, there's oftentimes more time spent creating content about short-term rentals than actually time spent building and hosting and managing them. And,
yes.
And being this idea, right, that like it is really hot and really trendy to spend all this time trying to build up an Instagram following and build a name for yourself, especially for those who are doing this full time and have a vested interest in building a true proper brand in this space. And it's what's really cool about what you just said, Christy, is you've just been laser focused on the thing that you're excited about and the thing that you're good at. And then what's happened is something that a lot of people are striving to get to and haven't been able to, right? You've organically attracted wild amounts of attention to your various properties. And as you just mentioned, you know, for several months out of the year, you might not even go on Instagram. You might not even be able to access, right, cell service, which is just totally wild. So I think that it's just a testament to, hey, do what you're really good at, be laser focused on that thing, and trust, right, the process. Trust that the rush will come in these other ways. I do want to talk a little bit about your actual portfolio here, right? So you've got the Hobbit Hole, you've got the Potato Hotel, you've got the Cocoon, which is that a newer property?
It is new. It starts like May 1st, I think. So okay. On the coast, yeah.
Okay, amazing. So of the properties and of course you've got the Treehouse in Hawaii. What which one am I missing?
I have a Fire Lookout in North Idaho in the Panhandle, and then I have my first family one that's also launching next month. Our bookings start at the end of this month, actually, is this Shipwreck House that I actually remodeled that was abandoned for many, many decades. And I think that's it. I think I have six. And then the big thing that I'm working on right now is more Fire Lookouts, but they kind of have a twist. My Fire Lookout is an original one from 1959. This ones that I'm building, it's like my dream property. I have 55 acres of like pristine forest in Wallace, Idaho. But the overarching and the bigger goal there is to have a Fire Lookout museum open for the public. And then these Airbnbs, I'm building five of them, will support that as well. Everybody tells me that a museum is like not a profitable thing, but I think I can make it one. So we'll see. But that will be phase two. So I'm just waiting for snow to melt. I'm pre-building as much as I can here in Boise. And then I'll get started as soon as we can like make it to the property. So
wow. Okay.
I'm working on this year.
That is amazing. That is amazing. So do you have like a favorite build? Like of the ones that you've built, like which one are you like most proud of?
I don't. They're all really different. Like even the interior design or something, I don't think that you can tell that the same person did it. I love all of them. When I go back on maintenance trips or whatever, I think I'm like working so much and on whatever that it like, I don't usually reflect. So when I'm there, I'm like, this place is so great. I love it. So they're all in like really beautiful areas. The potato is out in a field, but we have a cow there. And so I love her for that. So they're also different and there's different things that I love about them. When people ask me like which one I would live in, I would probably say the Hobbit Hole, because it's in like a town that has like good restaurants and stuff, but that's kind of what dictates that. So they're also different and special. And I spent so much time, you know, there in that town working day in and day out and getting to know people and stuff. So they're all so special. I wouldn't be able to choose one.
And my sense from what I've learned from you over the last almost half hour here so far is just that, my sense for the answer to this question is like it just kind of comes to me, but please correct me if that's not the sense or not the reality. But like your inspiration, your ideas, like do you have like a method that you test? Do you sort of like have a, oh, I could do this treehouse, let me like run it through these like these 10 questions that I always ask myself about a build? Do you have any process, or is it really just let's go build a Hobbit Hole?
No, I think if there is any, I mean, now there's so many data tools and stuff, but even when like AirDNA came online, you know, I'd already been doing it for a long time, or like when Airbnb first introduced, like, this is what you should be charging. They would say like, you should charge $40 and I'm charging $400, because they're just looking at like, you have no amenities.
Yeah.
This is a tiny place. Like, why would anybody pay this? And so like my properties are throwing off all the data points, you know? And then when people are like, these are the amenities pay, like, that's all true. I'm not saying that's not, I'm saying that mine break all of those rules and design rules and, you know, like, oh, it's got to be near this many people, all of those things. So I think what I do is I fall in love with an idea And then I justify it. I spend my time thinking like, well, I think that people would hop on a flight and then rent a car and then drive 2 hours to come to this thing. Or, you know, when I got Crystal Peak, that's in a town of 400. I've born and raised in Idaho. I've never heard of this town before because it's so tiny. And it was also the most expensive property that I had had. But at that time, I bought 12 acres with this tower on it that, again, had nobody in it for 30 plus years for $67,000. And they owner financed. And I still keep in touch with the people who sold it to me, and they're wonderful. And so, and even that, like, oh, the people that want to owner finance, they fit this certain demographic. And I'm like, that has not been the case. Everybody has owner finance. Everybody's situation is so different. And I think that if I could like relate it to anything, that people get excited. I think it's Kevin Kelly who says like, enthusiasm's worth 10 IQ points or something. I think that I'm so excited and I'm like, this thing has to happen. We're going to do it. And then they just like go along with it. But it's happening. And then for the guests too, I'm like, this place is so amazing. You like, come look at this. And then it works out. So when I bought that lookout, I just thought it was going to be seasonal.
Yeah.
Because it gets so much snow, you can't reach it. And then I was like trying to get up there in the winter again, like seeing when the snow is going to melt. And one day I just hiked up a couple miles and it was so incredible, like how peaceful and the snow just like, it makes things so quiet. I'm like, I've got to find a way to get people up here in the winter. So then I like searched online and I bought a $10,000 1964 vintage Thickall Snowcat, remodeled the inside. I know nothing about mechanics. Made it super cute though, shipped it up there. Then I had to find a driver for it. And so now we have like a hot cocoa bar in there with Bailey's that they can spike it with. And we, all winter, we are booked. We take guests up, drop them off on the top of the mountain, and pick them up in a few days. Wow. So it's like, I don't know how I'm going to make it work. When I bought the property, I'm just like, I got to make this work. And there's so many things that I try that don't work. And it's just like, keep going until something does, I guess.
Wow. Oh, this is so, so cool. You're amazing. This is really, really neat. What's most unique about what you're sharing here, Christy, is that you were doing all of this again, like before it was the cool thing to do, right? Like now everyone's talking about unique stays and everyone's trying to figure out what are those like really special one of a kind amenities or offerings that we can bring guests. Let's go buy, you know, 50 acres of land and build this luxury like landscape hotel, whatever. And yet like you were doing all of this and have been doing this. But before it was, you know, trending on all podcasts, right? Like, and that's just remarkable. I want to hear a little bit about, you know, your relationship with Airbnb or just, you know, different people that you have met along this journey that have helped elevate your properties, and helped, you know, and sought, quite frankly, your advice on, hey, how do we help inspire other people to do this? Can you, any like stories you can share with us about like other partnerships that you've done or press that you've had that has been like surprising to you along the way?
Yeah, I have a great relationship with Airbnb. And also I'm like such a fangirl of them because I even though I spend most of my time off grid in the woods, I love technology. Like I love that. And so I feel like they're ahead of the game. And even though I think a lot of people just get upset with growing pains and things like that. But throughout the years, I just liked like the ease of use. And I thought, okay, well, if this is good for me as a host, then it's going to be good for the guests as well. So that's one of the big things that got me to be just with them. And then because my places were so different, and again, now there are some different tools, I couldn't get insurance on anything. Mm. And so Airbnb very early on offered the liability and then the homeowner's insurance. And so that was like good for me. And I just barely had to use it this November. I haven't had any problems, thousands of guests, and I just barely had to use it. And it was great.
Yeah.
The claim, you know, and it was a serious thing. And so I feel like even though there's going to be like growing pains or like, oh, the pendulum's going to swing different ways or, you know, things are always going to be changed. I'm like, I know that I think that their objective, how they feel about, you know, doing the right thing for hosts and guests, I just feel like so aligned with that, that I haven't felt the need again to like build my own direct booking site and do all of the things that that requires. And then am I just having a new, I'm typing up a newsletter every week. So yeah, I've been able to do lots of cool stuff with them. At Airbnb headquarters, they'll recreate Airbnbs for like their different conference rooms. So they did that with the treehouse back in the day. And again, yeah, there wasn't a lot of uniques back then. It was just like this little growing thing. And so I've been part of, they'll call me every once in a while to like see, you know, we're noticing this trend. Is this what's happening for you with the OMGs? Like that people are they're picking their vacation based off of my house instead of based off of like going to this town. And so that was like something that we talked about years and years ago, that they were seeing this pattern with these unique stays. And so that it's just been really cool to be part of that. I think like the thing that like launched me originally was this lady, Kristen Dirksen. She has a YouTube channel called Fair Companies. And she reached out to me and said like, hey, I'd like to come shoot your tiny house in Boise. I'm coming through. I was like, oh, that's just a shed on wheels. I just built this place in Hawaii though. And so she did a video on it and that blew up.
Wow.
And I mean, millions and millions of views on her channel for all my places. And we have like a really great relationship. And back then I had like tried reaching out to different blogs at like interior design blogs, apartment therapies or whatever, and crickets. And then once I was on there, everybody was coming to me. So that was like something that was, I mean, really remarkable, again, not planned. And then, yeah, then people think like, oh, if you're in this magazine or something, you must see this huge influx. And that's not really the case, because the person reading the magazine, or watching HGTV or whatever, is not necessarily like searching for a vacation home. There are people who want to do that, you know, So it's like, it's not really, again, to chase those, the publicity things aren't really your customers.
Yeah.
So the rates of, again, with the data, and when you're like the first person to do it, the data doesn't really make sense. So my properties will have like a crazy amount of views, but then it'll be like, oh, well, you need to work on your listing because you have all these views, but people aren't booking. I'm like, right. Those people want to know how to build a treehouse or want to know what toilet we used or something like that. Yeah. And so you kind of have to know and be like really secure with yourself, because that could make you go crazy. You know, if you looked at all of those numbers and trying to make it make sense or make decisions based off of those, you know, it just wouldn't work for me. And everything has gotten so much better. There's so many more tools and stuff now, and it continues to be so, but I still have these things that haven't been adapted yet that would make my life a lot easier, like gift cards for individual properties. And I have like a crazy long list of things that I would like to have happen. But I think that's another thing, like you just gotta, I should not tell people to be so reckless, because I would never like do something that I thought was going, I'm not gonna risk my whole portfolio based off of a feeling or whatever. But, you know, I still have to be able to afford to do it. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, if I can rent it for this much, I should be okay, that sort of thing. And then it just ends up being great. And my people. So,
but I mean, you know, and you think about like the other approach too, right? Christy, is like you could go and you could buy a vacation rental in a very quote unquote secure, market. You could buy something that pencils really well. It looks really good on AirDNA, whatever. And then you have got a lot of competition and it performs okay. Right. At the end of the day. And it's like, okay. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm not losing money, but like, was this sort of like the best route? I don't know. Like I don't really feel like I'm making much money either. Right. And so that's the alternative, right? It is going with the quote unquote safe option that everybody else is doing. And you know, if you make a safe bet, the result, like the reward will probably also feel relatively safe, right? Versus making kind of a crazy bet of building this potato and having Dolly the cow there, right? Like, and according to the tech, right? According to the data, you should be charging $40 per night or whatever for that place, right? And you're charging 10x that or whatever it is, right? And that's because you've been able to cultivate something that is really unique, a really cool experience. And so I think at the end of the day, you have to decide as an entrepreneur, what game do you want to play, right? Like, and to your earlier point, you obviously shouldn't be stupid. You shouldn't play a stupid game, right? But when it comes to what you want to build and the kind of business that you want to run, do you want to go do something a little wild and a little crazy that, you know, might be risky, but also could have a 10x reward, right? Or do you want to do the safe option that everyone on the podcast are talking about that will have a 1 to 2x, you know, return? And at the end of the day, that's just an individual decision. There's not like a better option. One's not right and one's not wrong. It's just different. But where I think things are going, and as a traveler myself, right, I love looking for those unique places. Like, I love trying to find a place that nobody else in my personal network has stayed. And I like to show them that, hey, I stayed here. Check this place out. Look how cool this freaking hobbit hole is, right? Like, I'm going to bring, we're going to binge watch the Lord of the Rings in the hobbit hole, right? Like, or whatever it is. And so I think that, like, at the end of the day, where travel is going is people are looking for different. They're looking for unique. And so the entrepreneurs that are listening to this conversation hopefully can be really inspired by the work that you've done as just one example, but a really good example of how to do this, right? And how to do this well.
I hope so. Yeah. I just don't want to dissuade anybody with all the tools that there are now to be like, well, I don't know, this doesn't pencil out in any which way, but I really want to do it. And that's kind of how I think about projects. Is this what I'm going to be working on for the next 6 months, the next year, you know? And so time is, you know, such a limited resource. So it's like, there's lots of things that come across my inbox that I know would be profitable, but I know somebody else could execute on it well. You know, when that ship house came to me, I'm like, anybody else is going to tear this thing down. I don't think anybody is crazy enough to save it because it's a money pit and it's crazy. And so like, I knew that like, I need to do this because nobody else will. So that's kind of how I like think about the things and do I want to spend the next year coming to this town, doing this thing, you know, do I want to live here? So I think, you know, then it makes it so if it's not financially successful, which hasn't happened yet, knock on wood, the financials are like maybe the fifth thing I'm thinking about because I have a lot of confidence that I can make it work. But like, will I enjoy this? If I'm enjoying that process, which I would not enjoy, you know, even though I could make like a super, you know, cute suburban home in a city that I love, you know, or like New Orleans has so much great architecture. I could see doing one of those. Lots of people can do that. But then I'm like, am I not going to enjoy this process? What I am going to enjoy is like, yeah, chopping through the woods up in North Idaho trying to get this thing built. So I think thinking about it in that way too, like what does your day-to-day life look like on this property instead of like, well, if I do this and I can make enough money and then I can build that one and then I could do the thing that I want in 5 years. I'm like, well, I'm doing the thing I want now. So let's just do that.
It's almost like if you're going to go do something like build crazy, unique, cool Airbnbs, you have to freaking love the journey and be kind of okay with wherever the destination winds up being, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't love the journey and if what you're really looking for is just that destination of, oh, wow, I'm making, you know, 10x on this stay because it's quote unquote unique than I would a more traditional like single family home in a popular vacation destination, then this route's probably just not for you, right? Like to your point, like you kind of have to enjoy the journey and enjoy the process for what it is in and of itself if you're going to embark on something like this.
Yes, I do think there's a lot of, you know, lack of a better term, like bros. I don't know what the female equivalent is to that, to be like, oh, her numbers are crushing it. She's making so much money. Let's go throw up some Drury houses. Let's go throw up some Hobo, you know, like that sort of thing. And especially with the treehouse in Hawaii, there have been a lot of copycats, people who have stayed and like taken measurements of my place and then built a few rows away, and they don't nail it because all they're seeing is the profit of it, but they're not the type of person who wants to go stay in a treehouse. Like you're saying, I want to find the most unique thing. I want to find the place that I had to hike 2 miles into or rent a boat. You know, like if that isn't you, if you like staying in a luxury hotel, then that's the kind of experience you should create. But trying to create this off-grid experience when you have never looked at or wanted to stay in one, you're not going to nail it. You're going to miss it, and then that's going to not be successful. So I really think, or like if you travel with a large family, you should look at things because you know that market better than anybody versus trying to figure out what a single person or a girl's trip wants to be.
Yeah.
There are people that cannot fit in their target market and do it well, but it's so much harder.
Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible advice. And something that like when you say it sounds sort of obvious, but isn't necessarily something that I think a lot of people wind up thinking about, right? To your point, they do kind of think, oh, I should go build a treehouse, even though I would never stay in a treehouse. And again, I think that those are the kind of individuals that are doing it for the end, right? As opposed to, you know, for the process in and of itself. So
yes.
So,
and because they aren't part of that target market, they'll be like, oh, well, you know, this space isn't optimized, so I'm going to add a grill here, and then like not think about everything that a grill entails or whatever the case might be. So like it's actually a disservice, but everybody likes staying in some sort of thing. So you should just do the thing that you understand fully, you know?
Yeah.
You just want something so clean and boring and basic, like that is what you should do because that's what you enjoy and you'll nail it, you know, versus like, you know, well, that thing just costs money and she's not making any money off that, but they don't understand that all of this together is what like creates the experience. And when you chip away at all those little details, then you're just left with a box on stilts that's not really a treehouse, you know?
Yeah. Well, and to your point too, like when too many people do the same thing, the novelty wears off, right? So like, I remember like, I think this is still kind of true, right? Everyone talks about like how everyone needs a hot tub if you want to stand out. And like, that's like an amenity that like you just have to have or whatever. But now like, oh, it seems like every Airbnb that I look at like has a hot tub. And so to me as an avid traveler, like that is not a unique amenity anymore, right? Whereas maybe even a few years ago when that was, you know, there weren't all these really like sexy Instagram worthy like barrel like saunas and hot tubs, like when that wasn't a thing, maybe that was unique. It was a little bit novel. But now it's like every conference you go to, every podcast you listen to, people are talking about like you got to add more amenities like the hot tub, and now right from a traveler's perspective, that's no longer unique. So ooh. Again, I think what you're saying is spot on.
This just triggered a thing in me about the you know, the Instagrammableness of a property is like one of my pet peeves. Not that it shouldn't be photo worthy, but I think people confuse the intention. So people think, oh, well, they're just booking her place because they can take this great photo and they can post it on Instagram. It can really reduce the experience, right? Just because somebody takes a photo, that doesn't mean that that is the reason for booking that stay, right? And obviously our whole thing is on photos. That's how people are making their decision. But I feel like people will throw up an accent wall or whatever and then forget all these other things. I love an accent wall. I love a mural. I love all those things. But I think that people are so quick to be like, oh, people are shallow. They just want to perform for other people. And I'm like, I don't know those people. And I have 17 nieces and nephews, so like young people, and they are not chronically online like my generation is. So I'm like, I don't know anybody that's like doing it for the gram. Most people are wanting an experience, and the picture is a reflection of this amazing experience they have. So you can have that, but that cannot be the only thing. And then I would be like really careful if you hear yourself saying those things. Are those the people in your life? Is that your motivation for going on this thing, you know? It's not about the picture. You want to create the whole experience. And of course, they're going to take photos of that. It's like, you know, if somebody hiked a mountain and they took a selfie at the top of it, did they only hike the mountain to get the selfie? It's like, no, they wanted to hike the mountain and they took the picture. So I think that gets conflated in our industry a lot.
Yeah. Oh, so, so well said. And that reminded me of a conversation I had with somebody just yesterday who's built a really cool glamping experience. And one of the things that he was saying was like, hey, you know, there are all these like crazy glamping sites that are popping up and the units are so stunning and beautiful and they're glass or whatever that, that you just kind of stay inside the unit. Like people are going to just kind of stay in the unit. He's like, but when I think about camping, right, which, you know, glamping is like glamorous camping. When we used to camp as kids, we'd go, we'd pitch the tent and then we'd leave and we'd go and we'd run around and we'd explore. And we were only going back to the tent to sleep because the reason we were camping was for the experience of the woods and the river and the fishing and the fire pit. Right. And so he was saying, like, it's so funny that now, like when you hear the term glamping, it's all about how sexy is the unit. Right?
Right.
And he's like, no, like, I'm taking a totally different approach. Don't get me wrong. We're going to have beautiful, nice units, but it's not going to be about the actual unit. It's about what's around it. It's about what's outside the tent. So to your point too, I think that like people need to check themselves a little bit. We all do and realize like, hey, what is our intent here? What are we actually building for? And if we're just designing a specific spot in a specific place so that it's Instagrammable, is it really worth it? Like, is that what we want to be known for? Like that, the one like pink wall or whatever it is, like, no, like we want to be known for creating a truly transformative, magical experience for people that when they leave our place, they leave changed. They leave with great memories that they want to go home and that they'll cherish forever, even if they don't share it with anybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Christy, this has been amazing. I'm a huge, huge fan of your work. For those listening in, I know that your DMs are probably out of control and hard to manage, but I'll have links to your social handles in the show notes below. Is there a good way for people to reach out if they want to, you know, learn from you, or do you do any consulting, or like if folks want to pick your brain what's the best, I guess, place for people to go if they even want to just learn from what you're doing, even if it's not, you know, getting your time directly?
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I have a up-to-date website with my whole portfolio, I think, and it's just christywolf.com. But if you're like wanting to, if you have like a very specific question and stuff, Instagram probably is the easiest way. And I would say that most, like, if you're like, oh, I have this property, how am I going to do a toilet or something like that? Those are answers that I can help with. I think that most of the trend in my DMs is people almost asking for permission to like follow their dreams and like some sort of guarantee that this is going to work out. And so my blanket statement is you don't have to ask anybody for permission. Like, I don't know what that is, but I think like that's kind of generally like, how do I want to do that? How do I do that? You know, or just like, am I ever going to be able, like, will that work? And so that I'm just like, you just got to do it. And if you don't have the tolerance for it, then you can't, but you don't have to get permission to do anything. You know, you can do whatever you want to live the life that you want. Go do that. You know, so that's, but if you have a specific question, then especially like off-grid or utilities or something in that regard, or even like permitting stuff is like such a challenge and varies from town to town. But if there's like a very specific quandary you find yourself in, then I might be able to, you know, send a quick reply that might save you some headache.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, even if you aren't able to connect with Christy directly, just go follow the great stays that she's built. I think that there's actually, quite frankly, just a lot that you can learn as a follower from things that you've done, from, you know, photos that you've posted, and of course from your website itself. But Christy, thank you so much for your time. Keep on keeping on. I know that you're an inspiration to so many people who have this dream of building something special and something unique, whatever that means to them. And I think that you're just a great example of somebody who's really leaned in fully. And quite frankly, I think that you're consistently pushing the envelope for what kind of a unique experience on Airbnb can be like and feel like. So thanks for all the time that you've invested this, and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Behind the Stays. I'd love to know what you thought of the episode. Feel free to shoot me an email directly at Zach, that's Z-A-C-H, at spontaneous.com, or find me on X, formerly Twitter, at ZBoozy, that's Z-B-O-O-Z-E-E, or on LinkedIn at Zach Boozy Cruz. If this is your first time tuning in, it's a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you back again soon. If you've been a listener for a while, though, I'd greatly appreciate if you could subscribe and then leave us a rating and review of the show wherever you are currently streaming this podcast. Last but certainly not least, Spontaneous and Behind the Stays are totally bootstrapped, and my ability to bring you these stories is only possible because of our incredible advertising partners. We're very much a startup show, and while our growth rate is amazing, thanks to all you who keep tuning in and sharing our show with your friends and family, we haven't quote-unquote made it yet. So if you could do me a huge favor and go and check out the sponsor for today's episode in the show notes below, I would greatly appreciate it. Even if their offering doesn't make sense for you right now, sending them a quick message on social or an email, just saying that you're listening to the show and you appreciate their support would be incredibly amazing. All right, friends, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you on the next episode of Behind the Stays.